Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we get into these compelling stories, these important sources to pull out those key insights, the stuff that helps you feel, you know, truly informed. Today, we're diving into something pretty intense. It's Erin Ralston's memoir, Between a Rock and a Hard Place. And for this deep dive, we're looking at it through a specific framework, one designed to pull out these profound lessons from, well, really remarkable lives and thinkers. Akatra Foundation presents the Akatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Okay, so let's settle in. Erin Ralston. When you hear that name, you probably immediately think of that, well, almost unbelievable survival story. He was born in 75, American outdoorsman, got his degree in mechanical engineering from Carnegie Mellon, actually. And now, of course, he's a motivational speaker. But before all that fame, he had this really intense personal goal, climbing all 59 of Colorado's 14ers, you know, those peaks over 14,000 feet solo, in winter.
Yeah, I mean, that alone tells you a lot about his drive, his ambition, and maybe his comfort with risk and solitude. And his book, Between a Rock and a Hard Place, it's just so much more than a typical survival story, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's raw. It's first person. You're right there inside his head during the whole ordeal. It's not just the physical side, but this incredible psychological, even spiritual transformation under, well, unimaginable pressure.
Right.
He really gets into the how and the why. How do we find that strength? Where does meaning come from when everything is stripped away?
Yeah.
It makes you question your own limits, for sure.
So let's trace that journey. Starting before the canyon, who was Erin Ralston then?
Well, he describes himself as confident, definitely highly skilled in the outdoors, but maybe a bit overly arrogant, very passionate about solo trips into the wilderness.
And that engineering background wasn't just academic.
No.
It gave him this methodical, problem-solving mindset. He even quit a job at Intel, a pretty good corporate job, to chase this passion full-time. Yeah, that says a lot about his commitment to the wild, maybe to that feeling of self-reliance, too.
Well, all that experience, rock climbing, canyoneering, it made him incredibly skilled. He could handle terrain most people wouldn't even dream of.
Uh-huh.
But, like you said, maybe it also bred a little bit of recklessness, a tendency to go it alone.
Yeah, that mix of real expertise and maybe a touch of hubris, thinking his skill would always be enough.
Exactly. He was an expert, no doubt, but maybe too comfortable pushing limits by himself.
Which brings us to April 2003. He heads out, solo again, into Blue John Canyon in Utah, super remote place. And his prep, considering the location, was surprisingly casual. And here's the kicker, the big mistake.
He didn't tell anyone his specific plans.
Not a soul. He even bumps into two hikers, Christy and Megan, has a nice little chat. And that was it, his last human contact for days.
And that casualness turned catastrophic, just like that. He's descending this narrow slot canyon and this huge boulder, maybe 800 pounds, a chalk stone.
Just wedged in there.
Exactly. It dislodges and instantly pins his right hand and forearm against the canyon wall.
Ugh.
Just imagine it. The sudden shock, unbelievable pain, and then that crushing weight of total isolation hitting him. Right there. That's the moment. Everything changed.
So the first couple of days, Saturday, Sunday, he tackles it like an engineer, right? Methodical.
Totally. Applying that analytical mind. Mm-hmm. Trying to chip away at the boulder with his multi-tool, which was pretty dull.
Right? Not exactly the right tool for an 800-pound rock.
Not at all. Tried to rig up some kind of pulley system.
Yeah.
All while rationing the tiny bit of food and water. He had two burritos, a liter of water. That was it.
A purely physical battle at first. Ingenuity against physics. But ultimately.
Futile, yeah.
Yeah.
And by Monday, day three, things shifted dramatically. It wasn't just physical anymore.
Dehydration must have been setting in hard by then.
Oh, brutally. He resorted to drinking his own urine. And that physical decline triggered the psychological stuff. The hallucinations started.
So the battle moves inward.
Exactly. His body was failing, sure. But his mind started this whole new war against despair, against delusion.
And that's when the deep reflection kicked in, the regrets.
Yes, profoundly so.
Yeah.
He starts really confronting his own perceived selfishness. Thinking about friends, family he felt he'd neglected.
Right.
His ex-girlfriend, Sonja.
And recording those messages on his camera?
Yeah, those goodbye messages, expressing love, but also real apologies.
Yeah.
He's facing death, and it's like he's seeing his own life, his own choices, with this stark clarity for the first time.
Intense.
And then, amidst all that, the delirium, comes this incredibly pivotal moment. A vision.
The vision of his son.
Yes. He describes seeing this future son, blonde hair, maybe 3 years old, calling him daddy, and he scoops him up with one arm.
Wow.
And Ralston says this wasn't just a random hallucination. It felt premonitory. It completely shifted his mindset.
From preparing to die.
To desperately needing to live. Mm. To fighting for this future he suddenly saw so clearly. A future built on love and connection. It gave him this powerful, tangible reason to get out.
Which led him to the unthinkable, the amputation. Thursday, day 6.
He had this sudden, almost clinical realization. He figured out he could use the pork of his own body against the trapped arm to snap the bones, the radius and ulna.
Just the thought.
He describes the sickening snap. And then, the truly gruesome part, spending an hour cutting through the remaining skin, muscle, tendon, nerves, with that dull 2-inch knife on his multi-tool.
An hour.
An hour. But the moment he was free, he talks about this overwhelming feeling, not just relief, but triumph, rebirth. He let out this primal scream.
But he wasn't safe yet, not even close.
No way. He's incredibly weak, dehydrated, bleeding badly, and he still has to rappel down a 65-foot cliff.
With one arm.
With one arm. And then hike 7 miles out of the canyon.
That seems impossible.
It almost was. But then, that miracle encounter, the Dutch family, Eric, Monique, and their son, Andy, just happening to be hiking in that remote area, they heard his calls.
Wow. Talk about luck or fate.
Absolutely. They gave him water, Oreos, alerted rescuers, got the helicopter in. It just underscores how vital that human connection is right to the very end.
So, the aftermath.
Mm-hmm.
Recovery, the media frenzy. But the real story is the transformation, right?
That's the core of it.
Mm-hmm.
He embraced this second chance, reconnected with people, got married, and eventually he had that son he envisioned in the canyon.
Leo.
His story became this powerful testament to resilience, yes, but also to our capacity for profound change, how extreme adversity can completely reshape us.
Okay, let's really unpack this. We've heard the story, the timeline. But what was the core philosophy driving him? What emerged from those 127 hours?
Well, what's really striking is this shift, isn't it? He went in with this, you know, strong sense of self-reliance, maybe even arrogance.
Right, the solo adventurer.
Exactly. But the experience didn't just test him. It fundamentally broke down that individualism. It showed him in the most brutal way possible that adversity can be this incredibly powerful crucible.
A crucible.
Yeah, like it burns away the superficial stuff, the arrogance, the belief in your own invincibility. And what's left underneath is this core strength you didn't even know was there.
Mm-hmm.
And alongside that strength came this deep appreciation for things he might have overlooked before. Humility, gratitude, and especially connections with other people. His philosophy became less about proving himself and more about connecting and appreciating.
So how did that change his view on, say, life, success, failure? His purpose?
Well, that initial will to live, which maybe started as just instinct, it became something much deeper. It was fueled by love, by the memory of connections, by that hope for a future with others, like the vision of his son.
So not just surviving for himself.
Precisely. It forged this new identity grounded in responsibility, not just for his actions, like not telling anyone where he was going, but responsibility to others. He understood life's fragility in a way most of us never have to.
And accepting the consequences.
Yeah, but not in a passive way. Accepting the consequences of his choices became the foundation for living with real intention, real purpose afterwards. It was the start of his rebirth, really.
Okay, this is fascinating. You know, looking back, there seemed to be three absolutely critical moments, turning points, that just completely altered his path.
Definitely.
Let's start with the first obvious one, the accident itself. The moment the boulder trapped him.
Right. That wasn't just a physical event. It was the instant shattering of his entire self-image, his belief that he was untouchable, invincible in the wild.
It forced him to confront his vulnerability.
Totally. Absolute vulnerability. It kicked off not just the fight for survival, but that whole internal psychological transformation. The rock pinned his arm, yes, but it also pinned his old self, forcing him to deal with the reality of his, well, his hubris.
Then the second point. That vision of his future son, the blonde kid calling him daddy.
Yeah, this was huge because it gave him a why, a concrete, deeply emotional reason to keep fighting. Before that, maybe it was just instinct, sheer will.
But this made it personal,
yeah.
Relational.
Exactly. It filled survival with love, with a tangible future he desperately wanted. He wasn't just fighting against death anymore. He was fighting for that future life, for that connection.
Mm.
It gave him something beyond himself.
Powerful stuff. And the third turning point. The decision to break his own bones, that sudden, horrifying realization.
Uh-huh. This one is about agency.
Uh-huh.
It was this incredible intellectual leap, finding a solution where there seemed to be none. But it was also profoundly physical, obviously.
Taking control back in the most extreme way.
Yes. It marked that shift from just hoping waiting to be rescued, to taking decisive, brutal action. It was the ultimate act of will, of ingenuity triumphing over impossible circumstances, finding a way out no matter the cost. That was him taking back his agency.
So let's bring this home. What does Aaron's story mean for us? For you, listening right now, obviously most of us won't face anything that extreme.
Hopefully not.
Right. But what are the universal lessons here? What resonates in our own lives, our own struggles, even if they don't involve 800-pound boulders?
Well, I think his story really pushes us to think about our own potential, doesn't it? Our own perceived limits.
Absolutely. I mean, the first thing that jumps out is just the sheer power of human will. Determination.
Right.
His 127 hours, the amputation, it shows that the limits we think we have are often just self-imposed ideas. When faced with absolute necessity, especially when it's fueled by a powerful why, the mind can override incredible pain, break taboos.
It unlocks something primal.
Yeah, an agency we never knew existed. He did the unthinkable because he had to, and because he found that reason to.
And tied into that is mental resilience. Hope. It wasn't just about being physically tough. His strategies, visualizing, playing memory games, just holding on to that sliver of hope, they were crucial.
As important as the physical skills.
Maybe more so at times. The mind can be your strongest tool, keeping you going when the body wants to quit. It's real testament to mental fortitude.
And the isolation he experienced really hammered home the value of connection, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Those video messages, the vision of his son, even the final rescue by the Dutch family. It all points to how fundamental relationships are.
We're not meant to be islands.
No. That desire to connect, to be part of something bigger than ourselves, it's incredibly powerful emotional fuel. Maybe the most powerful.
And then there's the transformation aspect. He wasn't just someone who survived something awful.
Right. It changed him. Fundamentally. Made him more appreciative, more humble, focused on purpose. It shows that challenges, even horrific ones, can be profound teachers. Growth often happens in the struggle. Not just after it's over.
Which leads to that point about accountability, risk assessment.
Yeah, his honesty about his mistake, not telling anyone his plans, is a huge lesson. It's a stark reminder about planning, communication, taking responsibility for our choices and their potential fallout. Not just in the wilderness, but you know, everywhere in life.
And finally, it really forces a reevaluation of priorities.
Totally. Facing death made it crystal clear for him. Relationships mattered more than solo achievements. It's a prompt for all of us, isn't it? To do that priority check. Are we investing our time, our energy, in what truly matters? What would we regret if faced with our own rock?
These aren't just survival lessons, they're life lessons. Applicable to our daily challenges, our own metaphorical canyon.
Exactly. Ways to unlock our own growth.
Okay, so to wrap up this deep dive into Aaron Ralston's story, let's distill it down to three key takeaways for you to think about.
Right. First, let's call it an emotional insight. The most powerful drive to survive, to push through incredible hardship, often comes down to love and connection. It shifts the fight from being purely about self-preservation to being fueled by a desire for future relationships, for connection with others. That's the heart's why.
Okay. Second.
An intellectual insight. Think of extreme adversity as a forge. It burns away ego, illusion, and perceived limitations. In doing so, it reveals and strengthens our true character, showing us reserves of resilience we never knew we had. Our limits are often more malleable than we think.
And the last one.
A universal insight. Real freedom isn't just about not being trapped physically. It's about the radical capacity to choose, to act, to exert agency, even the most constrained situations. Making those meaningful, sometimes brutal, choices is itself a form of liberation, allowing for a kind of transformative rebirth. Akatra Foundation presents the Akatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI.
Join us next time for a new deep dive featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation. So after hearing Aaron's story, maybe take a moment to consider what rock in your own life might be holding you back, limiting you somehow, and then maybe ask yourself, what personal amputation, maybe it's symbolic, maybe emotional, maybe just a radical shift in thinking, what might you need to embrace to truly free yourself, to step into a more purposeful, more connected future, something to think about. Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive. Keep exploring, keep questioning. We'll see you next time.